Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 593, The New Talk. A surreal weekend from an inaugural to what can only be described as the counter-inaugural, the protests over the last weekend and the first day of the Trump administration. We're going to talk about the surreal nature of what is going on politically in this country in Podcast 593. Well, today, one of the biggest challenges for growing businesses is how you show client appreciation. The main reason is the workplace and the client space, the landscape for doing business has become very complicated and diverse. So if you go to networking events, I do, you will find people from all walks of life at these events, and it's like negotiating a minefield to a certain degree or another. So if you're in business and you want to show appreciation for your clients, doing so can kind of be complicated. You know, you can take them to lunch or dinner, but then you have to talk and who knows what will be said. You could do a fishing trip like Grandma and Grandpa did when they were running the business, or you can send baubles to people with your company name on it. Those things end up in right here. They end up, and I've got three or four of them. They've ended up in the middle drawer with the mints, which I never open here in the studio. So that doesn't work very well. Or you can wait till summer and do a boat trip on the lake. Same thing as a lunch or a dinner. Or you can try something new. Now, I follow brushstudio.net on Instagram, and they have all kinds of corporate events. This is a great way to show client appreciation. It's different. It's social. It's memorable. You can take a small group or a large group. But what happens is you can socialize and bond with your clients who are in the process of creating something unique and fun. This is what happens at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. Now, what is it? Well, an artist guides your team, your people, your clients through the featured painting step by step, and people come away with a painting. It is not paint by numbers. It's actually painting, and it's really fun, and people really, really enjoy themselves because the people at Brush Studio are event planning ninjas. They hold these events in relaxed and social settings. They have 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. It's always catered by Crave in the West End, so there's plenty to eat, and it's great and fun. So for a client appreciation party that your people are never going to forget, and they're going to take a painting home that they'll probably hang on their wall that they did, which is really amazing, check out Brush Studio. Brushstudio.net. You can reach out to them at 952-236-1700, 952-236-1700, or visit them online at brushstudio.net, Facebook or Instagram, or click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thanks, Brush, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. On the heels of nothing less than a surreal weekend in America this last weekend in podcast time, this is probably one of the most difficult podcasts I've had to do in some time. And I know it's difficult because sometimes I can come down here and just turn it on and go, and sometimes I stop and start and I have to try to organize my thoughts in some way, shape, or form. So this is, I guess, kind of a disclaimer because I wanted to do a podcast Saturday or even Sunday after the inaugural and the counter-inaugural, but I just could not bring myself to do it. And it culminated on Sunday night with quite a argumentative discussion with friends, and I'm almost, it's hard to even know where to step in, where what I used to call an entry point, because this whole thing is so confusing. I just feel at sea right now. So why? Well, we had the inaugural Friday, and then what we have as the only thing you can describe it as, the counter-inaugural protests on Sunday, and the vagina signs and everything else between that and Trump's inaugural. It was surreal, and not surreal in a good way. I am not inspired by the inaugural address, although I was never especially inspired by Trump either way. Definitely not inspired by the protests over the weekend. Most of it in urban centers in the United States, so New York, L.A., Chicago, St. Paul, and when I say urban centers, you know, places where the left is strong. And now all the talk about how significant this or that was, and we're talking about 78 hours, you know, the in the time that I'm doing this podcast, you know, Trump was inaugurated at 1 p.m. or 12 p.m., you know, 11 p.m. a.m., rather, our time, noon, Washington time, just Friday. So, you know, 3-4 days ago in podcast time. And there has been tons of discussion about the significance of everything. And here's the thing. If you don't agree with the direction of the left in this country in terms of where they want to go, then you're automatically put in the position of sounding like you're defending Trump and the direction that is the direction that he wants to go. So I don't want to refight those battles. Like I said, I come down here to the studio and I think I'm going to sit down and just talk about it for half an hour off the cuff about something. And then it comes down to becoming what I like to refer to as a bleeder. You know, it's just a nightmare of stopping and starting and restarting and trying to collect thoughts. And I really, to be truthful, don't want to spend all day scanning and printing news stories and trying to wade through this stuff and sort through all of it and discern what is actually fact and what is pure fiction, because honestly, I don't trust any of it because nobody else is doing it. Nobody, you know, least of all the people who are feeding off the energy of the protests and the latest antics of the new president and his team. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the media or this is just that you feed off of it like an addiction of some kind. This is what's going on. So an inaugural weekend, which should have been a moment to at least observe what they call a peaceful transition of power, which it was, turns into a battle over the size of crowds between the media, a stunt by Trump's press secretary Sean Spicer, devolving into arguments between those who support the so-called right and the so-called left in this country over how many people showed up for this or that and how you measure it, and we're off and running. And I could tell you, for instance, that the Sean Spicer press conference this last weekend, his first appearance in the White House briefing room, started with a couple of true events. In other words, they started with a couple of, presentations of evidence based on the content of tweets by reporters, and then it devolved into claims about crowd size, magnometers, crowd coverings, ground coverings, whether you count live feeds and television viewing estimates or combine them, and it's absurd, literally. And if you don't know it now, then you should know, and I guess I should say we too, because I don't know why I'm surprised. This is a tactic. This is the way Trump does things. Trump's people are decidedly unserious about this, meaning they do this to twist the press corps up and obfuscate by putting reporters and editors and producers and executives on the defensive, throwing a stunt because they know that these outlets have to have something to fill up the transmission line or to put on the website. And the discussion then that takes place is the discussion, if they take the bait, because they always do, then that is, in fact, the distraction rather than the substance of what might actually be going on. This is what Donald Trump does. This is what he has been doing. This is what confounds the media, because they don't actually do any reporting anymore. They just have people on and ask them questions, or they talk about something that happened, and they get people on to talk about something that happened. So what they end up talking about is the tactic, meaning the tactical demonstration that then gets a strategic response from the media, which becomes an obfuscation. It becomes smoke and mirrors, literally. Now, they did take the bait, hook, line, and sinker this weekend. So you had the event on, I guess it was, I don't know if it was Friday night or Saturday. I guess it was Friday with Sean Spicer. And then the Sunday morning shows, which, by the way, have relatively low viewership, if you want to argue about crowd size. And the Sunday morning shows then spent the entire time arguing about crowd size and the metrics of measurements. Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager and now counselor, consigliere, right? Introducing the laughable concept of alternative facts to go along with fake news. Now, people think that they're serious about this. I don't think they're serious about it. I think this is just their way of continuing to keep the fireworks going, right? And now there's all sorts of commentary and punditry and other talking heads waxing philosophical about the whole controversy, which I'm not going to do. I just am explaining to you what they do. So what will happen is that guy will have that woman on who says that thing, and the video excerpt is going to go viral. The other guy with the white hair is going to say that thing, and everybody's going to laugh at him. This or that star is going to put out a video. Some musical artist will post a song and video about the glorious revolution and the protests and how the whole country is going against Trump. That'll go viral, and then someone will put up a fake video, satiring that video, and on it will go. And this is what we consider to be political coverage in this country. Where do you come in on this if you support no one? Again, as I said, wholly uninspired by the inaugural, do yourself a favor. I'm going to put links up to the Reagan inaugural and the Trump inaugural. You just watch both and see what you think about the difference in tone and substance between the two presidents. And I'm very disappointed with the protests and the language of the protests this weekend, not to mention the window smashers in Washington, D.C. Last Friday. Clearly, President Trump is very capable of defending himself between he and the White House and their surrogates for at least the time being. And I'm not defending Trump by way of attacking the left and their surrogates like George Soros and Madonna either. I don't even want to think about a world dominated by people like that. So, you're put in a position that when you criticize the left, then people think that you're defending Trump. So it's hard for me because it's threading a needle here because I don't support Trump. For many reasons and reasons that I've explained. And I do think that, I'm not going to predict the future. I'm just going to say that, I'm just not going to say it. I will say that I have had the feeling that there is something deeply wrong in this country for a while now, and that feeling has not subsided. Sometimes it's bigger than others, and sometimes it's more confounding for me than others. But depending on which side of the political spectrum you hail from, that is what part you defend and attack from. And you're going to read into my statements whatever you want, and you'll hear whatever you want no matter what I say, because we don't think anymore. We just attack. We attack the messenger. We attack the source. We respond. We attack the person. We respond to tactical attacks, strategic attacks, and we attack and we attack and we attack. And then we move on to the next thing to attack about because there isn't time to resolve anything. I have got to stop looking at Facebook. It is a ghetto of terrible videos, bad spelling, stupid, and I do mean stupid memes and people reposting what she said or what he said. With appropriate reactions only. So my Democrat friends do not see that they are going to do the same thing when they post as my Republican friends when they post of the video of the guy who lays it out like no other and then defends what the guy said by posting more links to more guys who supposedly say it like no one else, because obviously the people on Facebook can't say it, or they're afraid to say it, or they can't spell, or they can't put a cogent thought together. It's much better that I post a video or a meme, because I can always say, hey, I was just posting a video. I didn't really advocate for blowing up the White House. I just posted a video of someone saying that, or I really didn't say that they should all be rounded up and put into camps. I just posted an article of the guy, with an intellectual construct that says that and doesn't. Isn't this great? So I guess I would say, and I've said it before, I said it during the election, fasten your seatbelts, because this is what it's going to be for the future. I was going to put a time limit on it and say, what's the next election cycle? It's not. For those of us who thought this was going to be over after the election, no, it's not going to be over. It certainly isn't going to be over for the elite who think they know better than the hayseeds in Ham Lake, Minnesota, or Hudson, Wisconsin, or Charlevoix. And it's not over for the conspiracy theorists who think Donald Trump is an outsider and that he's fighting the Illuminati. Meanwhile, the great mass of America, most people in this country just want someone else to do their thinking and their work for them because they don't have the time or they don't have the inclination, or maybe they're just sick and tired of all this crap and they're perfectly content to leave it all in a steaming pile for people who actually think it's important. The problem is the people who end up, climbing into the pile of steaming fecal matter end up controlling the political discourse and ultimately the political process because they're willing to step in and wade into the fecal, swamp and continue to fight for the sake of fighting. Whether it's the woman who verbally attacked and abused a guy sitting on a plane doing nothing because apparently he was a Trump supporter to the point where she was taken off the plane by airport security, or Sean Spicer bellowing at the press corps, or Donald Trump, for that matter, bellowing at the press corps in what can only be defined as a performance on Saturday or Friday or whenever it was. It just leaves some of us, and apparently very few of us, open-mouthed, because it's just surreal. Why do I say that it's surreal? Because it doesn't feel real. It feels like a performance. The whole thing feels like a performance. And maybe this is what you have to do these days in politics in order to be heard in a world where just about everybody is waking up and scanning Facebook instead of listening to the radio or watching television or reading a book. I'm not going to sit here and keep suggesting that people read books because nobody does. So what's the difference? For the people who supported Trump, I can only tell you when hundreds of thousands of people march in the streets, even if they are carrying vagina signs and smashing windows, even if they are in the urban centers that would have voted for Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democrats put up anyway, it's something to take notice of. I don't know how significant it is, but I can tell you this. If Republicans support President Trump, they'd better show up at their congressional district conventions, their party headquarters, their BPOU meetings, their basic political unit meetings, and they better start working on getting organized. And it's a broken record with me because the Bernie Sanders people already have candidates, by the way, and the Democrats and the George Soros people are already pouring money into organizing the socialist left, and that is what it is for the next election cycle. All they need is a candidate that actually gets people excited, and we might see some huge changes in the next 2 and the next 4 years. Here's the deal. I've said this before, so I'll say it again, and I'm saying this to my Republican friends. For the left, protests are opportunities for organizers to feast on people who don't know any better, who just came because their friends came, getting names and phone numbers and emails and pushing the next event and bringing people into the process. That's the whole idea. For the Trump supporters on the right, you may not think that these kinds of protests are going to do anything. To me, they look like tantrums. I didn't see any counter protests. I didn't see any counter protesters because everyone was reveling in the victory and the inaugural in Washington, which was less attended than previous inaugurals. But I would ask, what did you do this weekend to organize your neighbors to defend your victory and plan on widening your control of Congress and the Senate and House of Representatives in the next election cycle, or for that matter, in the next 4 years? So it may seem insignificant, but let's review the facts. Trump won a thin electoral victory in 4 or 5 key states where the issue was free trade and its supposed effect on manufacturing jobs. Don't even get me started about that. His approval rating going into office is about 41%, which is historically low. Most of his supporters are actually in minority numbers in urban areas, even suburban areas across the country. This is not to criticize or make fun of the so-called middle American Trump supporters. It is to suggest that these people have their work cut out for them when you see millions of people marching in the anti-inaugural. You're not going to be convincing people on the left to support Republicans in the next congressional cycle and the next presidential election by sitting at home and watching the inauguration on television and thinking, well, that's it. Time to get back. I got fences to mend, so I'm going to go back and do my stuff because this is all over with. That's not how the left views politics. So what's going to have to happen is people who support Trump are going to have to get busy getting people out who voted in 2016 and getting more people in the area out to vote for candidates you support in the 2018 cycles, the gubernatorial cycles, and so forth. Are you doing that? Because my understanding is there are still a lot of centrist, moderate, decidedly not Trump supporting people in the political process and positions of power. Again, not supporting Trump, just saying, for people who don't feel that what happened this weekend with the vagina signs is significant or laughed at it or again posting pictures of fat ladies and saying this is what it is and, that's funny. But where does that create an organizing response for Republicans? and for people who supported Trump to be prepared for the next election cycle? That's the key question, and that's what analysts will be looking at. So, as I have argued all along, you'd best be prepared with arguments in support of your president, if you support your president, because bellowing at people is only going to work so long. I was going to say that the media may actually learn that Trump's preferred method of changing the subject with some ridiculous stunt may stop working, but then that would assume that people in the media have some kind of brain, so I'm sorry for even thinking that that happened. I don't think that they will figure it out. I am waiting to see if news outlets become a little more centrist, but my sense is that they will hire investigative reporters and do investigative reporting to go after Trump a la Nixon before they actually figure out that their problem is that they lean too far to the left, and that is why people do not trust the mainstream media. I mean, that's just a fact, and my son goes crazy when I say that. People that like to think about things in a substantive manner go crazy. How, you know, you've got to prove that. Well, the proof I have is that most of the people in the media vote Democrat. Trump terrifies moderate Republicans, so you can imagine how moderate Democrats might react to someone like Trump. But the question is, when really, what's going to happen when the rubber meets the road? What do I mean by that? It's when what he does starts to have consequences. And I'm not talking about the basic ideas of reducing regulation, the size and scope of the federal and state government power, and so forth, because philosophically, it may seem that he's doing that. I don't know how you spend $1 trillion on infrastructure and build bridges and airports and tunnels and then turn around and reduce the size, scope, and power of government. But okay, well, you know, we'll wait and see. But I'm talking about the unforeseen consequences of the way these things are done. And then he's going to be asking for lifelines, and you'd best be prepared as a supporter. The question is, can you and can you be? Now, I will tell you a little quick story because I'm old enough to remember Watergate. And I'm old enough to remember and to be mature as a 15-year-old, baby newsman. That process in 1972-73 and making people understand that Richard Nixon took office as a savior. People have often talked about Barack Obama's speaking abilities, but if you and I guess I'll post a link to it, but if you actually watch Richard Nixon's last speech that he delivered, I think it was in the East Room at the White House on his departure after having to resign because he was about to be impeached by a majority Democrat Congress and most certainly would have been removed from office, the first president to remove from office after impeachment. And so he quit, you know, because that was his only way out at the time. And I was raised by Ohio Republicans, and my father thought Reagan was fantastic. And I remember the difficult process that they went through trying to make sense of what Nixon actually did. And the sense of betrayal that they felt by Nixon. Now, I'm not comparing Trump to Nixon. I actually think Trump's presidency, if you had to pick a template, will probably be a little bit more like Lyndon Johnson's than it will be like Richard Nixon. But Richard Nixon, if you go back and watch that final speech in the East Room, was a powerful, effective speaker, both on the campaign trail throughout his presidency and up to and including the last speech that he made, at least as powerful and capable and presidential, so to speak, as Barack Obama. Richard Nixon was a moderate Republican. He created aid to families and dependent children. He took us off the gold standard. You know, he had a lot to do with strengthening the power of government in an effort to make things better. He was a classic, quote unquote, progressive Republican, even though he railed against the so-called liberal Republicans in the Eastern, Republican power structure. But what he did had consequences. You know, he was able to get the United States out of Vietnam, which was the primary issue at the time. So, and I'm not going to refight the Trump. I'm not going to refight the Nixon administration. I'm just going to say that defending Nixon became more and more and more difficult because of the consequences of his actions and what he was actually doing in the White House, and it scuttled his presidency in similar ways. Oddly enough. Although not legal, but in similar ways to how the Johnson presidency was scuttled on the Vietnam issue. I've talked a little bit about that in previous podcasts. It's actually very interesting. And of course, everyone has different opinions about the presidencies. I guess what I'm trying to say is that for people who supported Trump, I don't hear the arguments. I'm not so sure what they think Trump is going to do. And I'm not going to make any more. I'm not going to say anymore. I don't think Trump knows what he wants to do because he's president now, and he can figure out what he wants to do, and he can do it. He's already started doing things today, the day that I'm recording this podcast. So he's in the process of doing his thing, and good luck. We'll see what happens. But I guess I want to say that I think that his supporters are going to have to do better at the arguments to be able to support him, and by extension, Republicans. So it's almost as though something evil, something wicked this way comes. There's something, there's a sort of a thread through all this of evil. I don't know any other way to describe it. It's a feeling. I'm not going to try to flush that one out with reason because it's just a feeling that it just does not feel right. There is something that's off about all of this to me, and I cannot put words to it. And it's not the left. It's not the right. It's not support for either one or not. It's why I am holding back and not supporting, because I still feel like another shoe is going to drop. Maybe it's me. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting tired of doing this. Maybe I can't support certain people, so I don't know what to do at this point. I mean, I'm going to continue, and I'm going to continue to share my feelings and my responses with people because I do. This is what I do. I express. This is my role, apparently, in life. But, or I guess I have to go work at a Starbucks and just pass it all over and just say I'm not going to do this anymore. But something does not feel right about any of this. It just has an odd sort of feeling to it from my perspective. And I don't know why. I don't even know why I say that. But I guess we'll have to see. So I'm going to stop because I don't know that I'm going to further anyone's thinking continuing like this. To me, this was a surreal and sad weekend in American political history. I was actually really disappointed in the protests and the way that people were protesting and the things that they did. And I was very disappointed, the inauguration being what it was, I was very disappointed to see this tactic of attacking the media start right away and just kind of completely eviscerate any sense of good feeling and that we were going to not have these tactics once the Trump team took over the White House. And you can look forward to this kind of tumultuous, emotional, angry responses on both sides for the foreseeable future. And maybe that's what I think is wrong or bizarre or strange. But I could say a lot of stuff about the future, but I'm not going to, because I'm out of the business of predicting the future or predicting the outcomes of these things. I can talk about what has happened and share my feelings and my responses and my emotions regarding it, but I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen. That's part of your job. I would suggest everyone watch this TV show, The Pope, because at one point the Pope in the TV show basically says, don't turn to me to tell you or to see God or for me to tell you how to reach God. You have to do the work yourself. And I heard that and I had to laugh because that's what I've been telling people for a long time. Well, I guess that's it. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast 593. Sponsored by Brush thenewtalkstudio.net. This is a great place for a client appreciation party. We're coming around to that time of the year when companies, large and small, trying to figure out ways to show their clients how much they appreciate them. I've gone through the whole list of things you can do. I highly recommend Brush Studio in the West End. They're doing a lot of corporate events, and that means you can take a large or small group, and you're going to have a good time. You're going to do something that's really fun and creative in a social and relaxed atmosphere, 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection, catering by Crave. Reach out to brushstudio.net at 952-236-1700, or you can click on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. Pilots, let's not forget the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast. If you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes something called the Angle of Attack Indicator. This is a revolutionary visual indicator with the best visual indicator in the avionics business, which shows how much lift your wings are producing. And that's key on that final turn for landing. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more info about Alpha's revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. And remember, pilots, Alpha Systems' mission is to make sure you fly safe. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com with the streaming, also stitcher.com, subscribing at iTunes, and right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and tune in and liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. You people that have ordered t-shirts, I got to get my butt in gear and get your t-shirts out. Wayne, I'm really recalcitrant, so I'm going to do that today. Or maybe tomorrow. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, which I'm working on shining up in its heated garage right now as we speak. Thanks for the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com.
Come so far, feel so all this time I've been waiting for. And who we are, where we're going to, all this time. So far, come so far, so let me know when we get there, if we get there. Get there, if we get there. In the dark, it feels so.